Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. It is a good day. We've got some great conversation ahead of us. We're going to take a look at some life-affirming topics today and some really neat stuff from LCMS Life Ministry. We kind of gave a sneak peek of it a few weeks ago when we talked with Tracy Quatham from LCMS Life Ministry. We're going to continue that conversation today, and I hope you can stick around for that. In the second half, we'll talk with our friends from Lutheran Family Service of Iowa about their unique approach to adoption. Hope you can join us for that conversation as well. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. You can find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin on our website. Go to kfuo.org, and you can find more information there when you find the CUW logo there in the sponsor section on our homepage at kfuo.org. Joining me in studio today, Stephanie Nugebauer. She's the lead ultrasonographer at Thrive St. Louis. Stephanie, thanks so much for coming over and spending some time with us in the studio today.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
I'm looking forward to learning about your work there and your involvement with this new project, the ultrasound project, and finding out more about the curriculum. Tracy Quatham from LCMS Life Ministry, also joining us in studio today. Tracy, glad to have you with us again.
Good morning.
Well, this idea of an ultrasound project that leads to a curriculum. We're going to talk about that and find out how it could be useful for schools. But before we even get into the curriculum, Stephanie, let's talk about your work as an ultrasonographer. What is an ultrasonographer?
Good question. An ultrasonographer is a technical medical person that performs ultrasounds on both males and females. But my job specifically is to perform ultrasounds on women who are expecting babies. Mm-hmm. And so I'm able to look inside the womb and be able to tell women how far along they are and how their baby's doing.
When did you decide this is what you want to do, that this is the career that you want to pursue? And first we'll start with that, and then we'll talk about the training.
Sure. I actually went to Concordia University, Wisconsin for this degree, but I didn't decide what I wanted to do until probably the middle of my second year, when I did a job shadow for a nurse that did ultrasounds at a pregnancy crisis center. And the day I went there, I knew that's what I wanted to do with my ultrasound knowledge. So
tell us about the education and training to become an ultrasonographer.
Sure. Well, I know it's different for different people going into the field, but as far as students at Concordia, Wisconsin, I did 2 years of classroom work, and then I did 2 years studying at Columbia St. Mary's. So more clinical work than classroom work.
Mm-hmm. And as you continued through the program, what was most unusual, or what stood out for you as you continued to learn about this technology and to work with patients? What were some of the highlights or things that stood out for you as you continued to learn as a student?
Sure. Well, even before I went into pro-life ministry, when I was a student, the OB ultrasounds, so the obstetrical ultrasounds when a woman is pregnant, that really opened my eyes to the sanctity of human life. And it was awesome to be able to see unborn babies in their mom thriving. And the fact that we can see facial features and arms and legs. And it struck me even then as a student that abortion is a very real issue that touches not only the lives of women, but also of the unborn.
How many times looking at that screen, have you ever been moved to tears?
I haven't. I'm just not that kind of person. However, I have had a majority of my patients move to tears. I, as a professional, have to keep myself composed and together, but for the moms that are seeing that, even if they weren't ready for a pregnancy, a lot of them are brought to tears just with the realization of what's going on.
Sure. I've had many ultrasounds, but not that kind.
Yes.
Many ultrasounds before myself, and just to, like, the heart and things like that, just to make sure that I'm healthy, and never moved to tears. But when my wife and I first, you know, saw the ultrasound of our son, and to see, you know, some of the features, and to see the you know, and to hear the heart beating and things like that, just overwhelming to realize that This is a life. This is a person. Mm-hmm. It was just overwhelming. And certainly I imagine more so as a parent, how overwhelming that can be. How has this technology developed over time? How has it progressed, I should say, since its early beginnings, around the 70s, I think it was?
Yes. Actually, ultrasound has been around for a little over 30 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm not old enough to remember what it was like way back then. But
I remember seeing it on the news.
Great. Well, I have seen pictures of old ultrasound machines, and they used to be these huge dinosaurs, and now they've mm-hmm. they've very much streamlined the technology. But as far as how it's progressed, just making the picture clearer mm-hmm. and clearer, and being able to see things even better, the technology has improved the quality of the image and what we're able to diagnose with ultrasound.
Can you describe how ultrasound works in layman's terms? I know the math and the science and everything that goes into there's a lot of work behind the scenes. But for the average, you know, layperson who really doesn't understand the science, I know you had to study that as a student. Help us understand how ultrasound works.
Sure. Well, ultrasound uses sound waves to produce pictures. And so it's not an X-ray. It's very different than that. It doesn't use radiation. So basically, I have a probe, which is what we could consider a camera, mm-hmm. which actually sends out sound waves. It's kind of like sonar technology. The sound waves bounce off of the object and then return and create a picture on the screen.
So sound waves are traveling from this probe, the transducer, into the womb, and coming back, and the rate at which they come back really creates this picture.
That's correct. Yes.
And now, you know, when this first started, these were really basic images. And today it's so advanced that we have what some call 4D.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. You need a special probe for that. Mm-hmm. And I actually don't perform 3D or 4D ultrasounds, but the technology is amazing and what they can do. It's not used as much diagnostically, but mm-hmm. more for the mom and dad to have kind of a fuller picture of what their baby looks like.
Now let's talk about the connection to your work to LCMS Life Ministry. Tracy, when did the idea for this project begin to develop a curriculum and to learn to use ultrasound to help us understand what's happening in the womb?
It must be almost 2 years ago now that Stephanie came to Life Ministry and said, I'm an ultrasonographer, and I think it would be great to show our LCMS school children confirmation classes what's happening in the womb.
Where did this idea, when did you start thinking of that, Stephanie? When did you start thinking, man, if kids could just see this, that would shape their worldview?
Well, I have to be honest. I went to... First of all, I went to Concordia Seminary for my master's degree, and I had to write a paper. It had to be a position piece about something we wanted to see grow in the LCMS. Mm-hmm. And I took the easy way out, and I did what I knew, and I went with ultrasound. Mm-hmm. And the more I did my research, the more I realized the need for this ultrasound project to happen, where we could educate young children, children still in school, about life in the womb, so mm-hmm. that if and when it came time for an unplanned pregnancy, which typically happens in the teenage years, they would already be educated about their decision much more than they would be already.
Hmm. And so how did you go about preparing for this curriculum? How did, when you came to LCMS Life Ministry and said, what can we do? And so how did you start building this curriculum?
That's a good question. it wasn't just me. That's for certain. I just came with a vision, mm-hmm. and then LCMS Life Ministries made it happen along with me. And so the idea really took shape when we thought of, well, what's practical for us? We can't haul an ultrasound machine to classrooms, and mm-hmm. That would be more work than convenient.
Sure.
And so we decided to create this video that could be used in classrooms instead. And so the idea is that it's a virtual field trip for kids. They don't even have to leave the classroom, but they have their eyes open to what happens in hospitals and medical clinics where ultrasounds are happening.
Tracy, tell us about the curriculum, how putting all this together, who all was involved in this? We know that, that Stephanie was certainly a key role in this.
Well, many of you remember our good friend Maggie Carner, and Stephanie came to her and asked, could this happen? And Maggie, of course, said, yes, absolutely. So Maggie was in at the beginning of it. We did some planning, found some curriculum writers who were experienced writing in scientific and educational curriculum, and it really just came together.
Who might use this curriculum, Tracy?
We're hoping that high schools can use it for their classes, also confirmation classes, youth groups. It's really aimed at that, seventh grade on up through high school. We're offering it free of charge to our schools. The way it's set up, we're hoping that it can move beyond even just our LCMS schools. It's not specifically religious in nature, although we do believe in the sanctity of human life. But we also believe that we can address the sanctity of human life, not specifically in a religious nature, so that it can be used outside of our schools as well.
As I understand, that most of the chapters or the modules really deal with a number of things. The what does an ultrasound say? What does human development say? What does scientific reasoning say in history? And then what does the Word of God say?
Right. There's the one module that is specifically Christian or LCMS focused, while the others support that, maybe not specifically saying it in so many words.
So let's focus in on that module, Stephanie. What does the ultrasound say? What do you teach us in this module?
Well, the whole premise is that with ultrasound, you really don't even have to say anything. The picture kind of speaks for itself. And so in that module, when we're using ultrasound and showing the video, kids can see for themselves that what's inside the womb is very much like an adult person in the way that it moves and the way that we can see features of the face, the very fact that it has a heartbeat. And so the hope is that just by viewing the ultrasound pictures and the live video of the ultrasound, that kids can kind of educate themselves that, oh my goodness, this is just like me. This is a human being, and can come to that conclusion during that module, but then also using the whole process of the curriculum together.
Are there other parts of the module that you would like to talk about or that you shared or had some input on? Are there other modules?
Sure. Well, honestly, the curriculum writers were the masters behind this. I simply helped with editing, really. But what strikes me is the one of what the Bible says, and the fact that Christ in the incarnation, so taking on human flesh, he was in the womb, an embryo, and the fact that that life was valued, and he basically hallowed life in the womb for us already in the incarnation. And so we as Christian people have no place to deny the human rights of an embryo. And that's really striking for kids going through that curriculum.
What do you hope, and you shared this when you were talking about your vision for this project, what do you hope will be the outcome of this curriculum? We know that it's already making its way into some schools for this school year. What do you really hope, who will it reach? What schools will it reach? What individuals will it reach?
My hope and my prayer is that it will extend beyond the LCMS schools, parochial schools, and get into public schools. That's the vision, and that's the dream. But beyond that, it's just the fact that that in a sense, education is empowerment. And so if we can educate children and teenagers at this stage, they'll be empowered to make a life-affirming decision or be able to speak into the lives of their friends in that situation.
What do you say to the naysayers who say that, this is those who just have a different perspective, who say that this shouldn't be in schools? What do you say to someone that says that this isn't really necessary for junior high or high school?
Well, I haven't come across that quite yet, naysayers. But, I would point to the fact that you can pick and choose modules, and that's the wonderful thing about this curriculum. So if the only thing they liked about it was the scientific module, if they strictly wanted to focus on the science mm-hmm. of fetal development, then they could absolutely still use this. And honestly, they don't even really have to give any further instruction to children, nor do mm-hmm. they have to take a pro-life stance to use this. And so I would say there's still value and worth mm-hmm. in this program that we have.
Tracy, how has the curriculum been received? I know there was an email blast that went out, a little over a month ago or somewhere around a month ago?
There was. And within 2 days of that email going out to our rostered church workers, we had already over 200 orders. And then in the past couple of weeks, we are up over 350 orders for this from our schools and congregations. So obviously there was a need there mm-hmm. that congregations, teachers, pastors, youth workers needed this resource. And we're just happy that we were able to provide it.
So this curriculum is intended for, you said earlier, seventh grade and up, really.
It is. It's very flexible. Mm-hmm. So if a pastor or a church worker receives it, previews it, they may decide some modules work better for them, some modules don't. That's, like Stephanie said, mm-hmm. the beauty is in the simplicity of using it and its flexibility.
So it's a DVD. There are videos on the DVD. What other resources are on this disc?
There is a student handbook, a mm-hmm. teacher guide, some PowerPoint presentations. Everything that the teacher needs to present the program is on the DVD. They can pick which parts they want and then print those for use in the classroom.
And because it was designed by educators, curriculum writers, this is something that can be easily incorporated into the curriculum in day schools and meets educator standards.
It does. And we were very intentional to make sure that it would meet not just the religious aspect, but the national education standards, so that a teacher can use it and say, these are the standards that I'm meeting with this curriculum. Mm-hmm. So that makes it very easy, and we hope that people will use it.
So it could be used as part of a science or a health curriculum in other schools.
It crosses curriculum, crosses subjects. So they may use it for science. They mm-hmm. may use it for religion. They may use it for social studies, for writing, for math. There's very flexible, lots of options.
So it's very interdisciplinary. Mm-hmm. Well, this is just, I don't think anything's been done like this before. This is outstanding to have a resource like this, and just an idea that came to you as you were a student and learning along the way, and now taking what you've learned and shared with all of us, a curriculum that hopefully will impact the lives of many students, so that it shapes their worldview, and they see that these babies in the womb are human lives. Sometimes we say that, a picture is worth 1,000 words. This is worth probably more than that, isn't it?
I would hope so. Yes, I do believe it is.
Tracy, how can we get the curriculum?
The easiest way is to go online to our website, mm-hmm. lcms.org/life. If you have questions, you can also call me. Reach me at 314-996-1711.
Now, curriculum usually, when we're talking about school curriculum, is usually kind of pricey or expensive. Tracy, how much does it cost?
There is no cost. All you need to do is contact us. It's not available yet. We're taking pre-orders. Mm-hmm. Contact us, and when it becomes available, we'll send it to you.
Any idea when we're anticipating it'll be available?
Probably around August 1st.
Very good. So it could be used this school year then.
Right.
August 1st rolls out and will be available for schools or around August, hopefully. So you can place your order just contacting Tracy, and you can find that information on lcms.org/life. So, Stephanie, any more projects in the works? Are we going to have a second curriculum?
Not currently. We're focusing on making this the best possible. And
sure.
So we're getting ready to roll it out, and then possibly something further down the road. But we'll do 100% on this job first.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is just great that we're going to get this out into schools so that they can use this and really shape the perspective of education. I don't know of any. Have you all seen any other curriculum that even comes close to doing what this curriculum will do and giving us perspective of what's happening in the womb?
I have not, Andy. However, this whole project is new to me, but mm-hmm. I did find it lacking, and not specifically in the LCMS, but just in the larger church mm-hmm. body, a resource for education that is up to date, relevant, appealing to high school kids.
Mm-hmm. What does this have to do with your day-to-day work? How does this, your day-to-day work, you serve with Thrive St. Louis, lead ultrasonographer. If every teen in America saw this, saw these videos, were received instruction through this curriculum, would that change your day-to-day job?
Oh, I would hope so. And that's the whole idea. Honestly, the hope is that education would make my job obsolete in a sense,
mm-hmm.
So that women could avoid crisis pregnancies and then not even consider abortion. Mm-hmm. That would be my prayer. And I think that echoes the prayer of the whole church as well.
How do you think this will shape? We've talked about women. How do you think this will shape men's perspectives on life in the womb, on just life issues in general, pregnancy and these life issues?
That's a good question. I would hope it would have a very similar effect, mm-hmm. at least in a very practical sense of educating men. Unfortunately or fortunately, for men, they're not able to, connect as emotionally with their child as mm-hmm. a woman would, especially in the womb. And so the sheer, scientific facts hopefully would at least lead them to form an opinion that is God-pleasing towards life and unborn life specifically.
A perspective that's based in truth.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're seeing here. I mean, you can't argue with the truth and the reality here. Well, thank you for the time that you've put into organizing and putting all your work and expertise into this curriculum. It's just outstanding. I can't wait to see it as well when it rolls out in October. This is going to be a great resource, I think, for our schools. Tracy, thank you so much for all that you do with LCMS Life Ministry and to help provide this to our schools and educators. I know before we went on the program, you mentioned even some home educators are contacting you to get this resource.
We have. We've had some home people who educated home. We've had a few pastors and educators outside the LCMS asking, which is wonderful.
LCMS.org/life. Thank you so much for being my guest today, Tracy Quatham with LCMS Life Ministry. Thanks so much for being my guest.
Thanks for having me.
Stephanie Neugebauer, thanks for being my guest today.
Thank you.
You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Joining me by phone today, Kim Laube, Director of Pregnancy Counseling and Adoption Services with Lutheran Family Service of Iowa. Kim, welcome to Faith and Family.
Well, thank you so much. I'm really glad to be here.
Looking forward to learning about your work with Lutheran Family Service of Iowa. Kim, share with us, how long has Lutheran Family Service of Iowa provided adoption services?
Right. Well, Lutheran Family Service began here in Iowa providing those services since 1901, so a good number of years. And adoption has changed considerably within that amount of time, but 1901 is when things got started here in Iowa.
Wow. So that's quite a while that things have been going on with Lutheran Family Service and Adoption Service. What is, when we talk about Adoption Service and perhaps other services too that Lutheran Family Service of Iowa offers, what is unique about how Lutheran Family Service goes about things?
That's a great question, Andy. And I'll tell you, I think probably the biggest item to really focus on here on the differences would be that Lutheran Family Service sees this as a ministry to children that are in need. We do not see our agency as being here to locate babies for childless couples. But what we are doing is looking for Christian couples who will raise up a child in a Christian home and teaching them about Jesus Christ and baptizing them and making sure that, you know, we're doing this as a Christian ministry and not really an outreach necessarily for those, for infertile couples. And really that focus for us really makes things an awful lot different. Our focus is the ministry of the children. Our focus is also on the ministry of the women that we're serving who are unexpectedly pregnant. And we are certainly so grateful to be able to work with couples who are looking and willing to be able to raise children in a Christian home, whether or not they might be childless couples or not. We're certainly happy to be able to create a family for a couple that was waiting for one. But our bigger focus is that we're wanting to make sure that these children are raised in a Christian home.
And that is a noble task in and of itself, a challenging task in this day and age as well. What are some of the challenges that you face in trying to make those connections to provide for children who need a lifelong family?
Absolutely. Well, one of the biggest challenges that, you know, are certainly the talk of the day would be the Supreme Court's ruling regarding homosexual couples and homosexual marriage is the law of the land. Here in Iowa, homosexual marriage has been the law of the land here for a little over 6 years. And so we know that in some ways we face risk by we stand firm on our beliefs that these children, that, you know, we're working on a ministry for these children, and we want to place them in a home with a loving mother and father who will help teach them the Word of God and to keep them centered on Christ. And so our stance here at Lutheran Family Service has always been that we place with only a married husband and wife. And that they must be, you know, married for at least 3 years of marriage so that we can start to understand the stability of the marriage and so forth. And that certainly provides some risk involved in what it is that we're doing here at Lutheran Family Service. But we also feel that that risk is certainly nothing that we're willing to compromise on. And I will continue to do this work in this manner and in placing children in Christian homes.
Let's talk about that adoption process. How does it begin? Let's start with, should we start with the child or with the couple?
Well, let's start a little bit with the couple. We'll talk about that side of the adoption program, and then we can talk a bit about pregnancy counseling and how that works, if you like.
Sure.
But typically what happens is a couple will contact Lutheran Family Service and let us know that they have interest in the possibility of adoption. And we'll walk through with them typically over the phone to begin in talking about the types of adoption that we provide at Lutheran Family Service and what their options might be. We do provide international adoption options. We work in conjunction with other placing agencies in order to accomplish that, but we're able to provide and the education and assessment that is necessary for a family prior to them being able to adopt a child internationally. And then we also provide the service that when the child comes home, that we do the post-adoption service as well and to ensure that the child is doing well, that everyone is transitioning and they've received the type of referrals and resources that they need in their community. And then we report those things back to the country where the child comes from. So we generally talk about the type of adoption that we have available to the couple and what they might be interested in. And our packet of information would include, our biggest program is our domestic adoption program, and those are newborns that are placed from the hospital setting into their adoptive homes at that time. And that being our largest area, we have some options for couples who, for some couples, they are interested in maybe working with multiple agencies, and others really are looking for one agency that they can work with fully. So we have options for couples, you know, depending on what it is they would like to do, that will help them with the freedom financially to be able to work with multiple agencies and waiting until they have an actual match with a birth mom before their fees are to be paid and so forth. So we have some nice options that we lay out for them, and we also give a bit of information, too, about foster care here in Iowa, because some couples, what we learn, and this may not surprise you much, Andy, that adoption services can be looked at and thought of as a fairly expensive option. And for some, they feel that they're just not able to be a part of an adoption plan based on the finances. And really, that's not true. There are many, many children in foster care in Iowa that need a loving and Christian home as well. And those options are certainly something that families have to take time in order to do the education pieces that are necessary and the home studies that are necessary, but they certainly can be a part of adoption where there is no cost to a family. So we provide information like that as well and wait for the families to let us know what piques their interest, what have they hoped for in terms of their adoption plan. And once they've made some decisions about what that is, we will get the process started with them. And then we go through something called a home study. And quite frankly, I think it probably should be termed a family study because it isn't so much about their home. It's a lot more about their family. And there are many things by law that we need to cover, and other things that we cover, they're really part of our agency's beliefs and making sure that we found the right couple for a family to work within our agency. But we certainly do talk quite a bit about their faith and their how that really works in their household, and that has a lot to do with our agency's policies. But the types of things that need to be discussed in a home study that are more by law would be the discussion of their finances. What is their home like? Is there room for a child in that home? What kind of jobs do they have? We discuss stability. We discuss and that would be stability in their marriage and their coping skills as far as, you know, having life's ups and downs. And we'll talk about their physical health and many factors that go into a home study, and that generally will take us 2 to 3 months to conclude. And at that point in time, we would either give an approval for them to move forward, or we may give some advice where we need to have some changes in the home before we could give that type of an approval. And during this process as well, we're doing quite a bit of education because we feel that a family needs to be not only assessed, but they need to be prepared for what they might be facing when they're planning an adoption and how that might be different than having a biological child added to their family. So we spend quite a bit of time within the education, some of that being face-to-face, and some are DVD-based or online-based or books that we have them read and discuss with us. But that preparation of that family is important.
And so as we go through this process, are there things even before we even start this process that we need to consider? I know there's obviously a lot of things along the way, but what's that first step as we even start thinking about adoption? Do we reach out to you, or do you have like an orientation or like a open house type meeting? How do couples make that connection with you initially?
Sure. Generally speaking, what we do before the home study would begin, when a family expresses interest, we do a little bit of conversation over the phone. Mm-hmm. But if a family feels like, yes, this might be the right agency for us, we want to move forward, we do individual orientation. And so they would register with us, and then we would have a face-to-face meeting at that time where we could talk a bit more about the types of adoption that pique their interest, what do they think, you know, would, and then we can talk a bit more about what their fears are with adoption. And for many, some of those fears might be surrounding the openness in adoption. And what I mean by that, Andy, is years ago, and maybe, you know, a few of your listeners will be even thinking about adoption, that was closed. So for many, many years, adoptions were closed, meaning that a birth mom would not know their child, where that child might reside, and they would not have met the adoptive parents of that child, so they really have no idea and no relationship. But adoption has changed considerably in the past 20 years or so. There has been quite a bit more openness in adoption, meaning certainly here at Lutheran Family Service, one of the things that our adoptive families would find in a domestic adoption is that the vast majority of the birth mothers that we serve will want, first of all, to choose and select for themselves the family that will parent their child. And many of them also want to remain in relationship with that family. And so a lot of the time that we spend in our orientation is talking about what does that look like? Because for adoptive parents, that can really be a fear that a birth parent might be overly involved in their lives, and that, you know, it may be a point of you know, not being comfortable any longer, or maybe it feels more like co-parenting instead of the relationship that they had hoped for. And what we've really found over these years is that the fear is really that the truth is the opposite of what these adoptive families have thought. The adoptive families have thought maybe there would be too much involvement, but really what we see is that initially there will be involvement by the birth parent. And the biggest complaint or the chief complaint of our adoptive parents over time is that there is not enough involvement. So as the child got older and the child had questions about identity and that they really could have benefited from the relationship, they may not have as much closeness with the birth parents at that time. And so really it's really fascinating during our orientation that we find that some of those fears are really really the opposite is really what we find to be the truth of the matter.
Let's talk about, let's go further, I guess, in the process. Anything else in the process for the couples before we talk about counseling?
Sure. As far as the couples, you know, once the home study is complete, they are then creating a profile book, which is like an album that you might create on Shutterfly or one of the other online photographs. Companies. And this picture album, or this profile is what we call it, gives an idea for each birth parent who is looking for potential adoptive parents a little bit about each couple or each family. So they're, of course, filled with pictures, but they're also filled with text. And in the text, it gives a lot of information about what family life would be in that particular home, any traditions and things that they do or fun things or vacations that they like to take or activities that the family's involved in. And the profile books are really the first glimpse that a birth mother has of our adoptive family. So our adoptive families, once they've been home study approved, will begin to work on their profile books. And their profile books are then, they create duplicates of those so that we have one in the hands of all of our caseworkers. And we have four of us that are on the team here in Iowa. And each one of us has a set of all these profile books so that we're able to, at a moment's notice, be able to use and present them. As sometimes things move very quickly in the area of adoption, and other times we have lots of room to, toy with. But so we use those profile books to help in the selection process. And for adoptive parents, after the profile book is made, really that is the next step, and the next stage is the hardest stage, and that's the waiting. And I think if you ask any adoptive parent, I happen to be one myself as well. I adopted a child in 1999, and the waiting process is really difficult. When you're busy and you're taking care of activities and you're getting paperwork done that needs to be sent to the agency and so forth, you feel like you've got some traction and you really have some control. But when you get into that waiting process, that's really when, we have encouraged our families to be very faithful in prayer as a couple about the child that will be coming to them, about the birth mother that is carrying that child, and to really just bathe the entire process in prayer, because that can be a very frustrating and difficult time for them.
Let's talk about the birth mother and pregnancy counseling.
Sure, absolutely. Well, pregnancy counseling here at LFS in Iowa, we, first of all, will serve any birth mother that contacts us, regardless of, we've talked a lot about faith being a part of the process of the adoption process. That certainly is not a requirement at Lutheran Family Service for serving a woman who is in need. We would serve any woman that comes to us in need, and we would absolutely make, you know, our Christian faith available to all women who will allow that to be a part of the process. And, you know, sadly, in some cases, that, you know, is not a part that they are necessarily looking for. But we work in relationship with these women. Generally speaking, we will, they'll come to us in a variety of ways. We may have at some times a call from the hospital that said, there's a woman that's here has just had a baby, and she's let us know that she would like to place her child for adoption and to make a plan. And so they'll call us, and we've maybe never met her before, but the baby has been born. Other times, women will come to us early in their pregnancy, and we'll have an opportunity to have quite a relationship established with her and being able to counsel her in regards to what her plans, you know, might be for this child. In some cases, we have women that come to us who might be abortion vulnerable. They might be very early in their pregnancy. So those women who are abortion vulnerable are given information about the development of the unborn baby that she's carrying, and certainly given also language that really helps her identify the humanity of that unborn child and to help focus her on the needs of her child as well as her own needs. So we, you know, really can just depend a lot upon, you know, how a woman, you know, comes to us. Sometimes it will be through referrals in the community, other times she may have just found us on the website and so forth. But I will serve all women. And one of the things that we really do initially is to help them understand the process of decision making. And could they consider, you know, the option of adoption? Should they consider the adoption, you know, the option of parenting? And we certainly help them explore all options. We are not an agency that's a hard sell on, you know, that we want her to place for adoption and that we're pushing in that direction. We want her to make a decision that is best for her. And for some, they will have enough family support that they can certainly raise a child. And they really just need to be lifted up and helped and supported through this process. And for some, they just need to be able to even have that initial conversation with the others that are involved in their life, you know, that don't look at this as great news. You know, it might be hard for a teenager to tell their parents about a pregnancy, or it may be just some difficulty that she's having with the father of the child. And, you know, that relationship oftentimes is, you know, sometimes hostile by the time we become involved. But it, certainly many of them have deteriorated at that point, and we need to have some involvement and help in them coming together about making a decision for the child. But we spend as much time as is necessary and as much time as we have with birth moms and with their extended family, with birth fathers, and whoever might be a part of the process of decision-making for that child. And we talk about what might be best for the child in regards to what her resources are and what her feelings are about being a parent and whether or not she would be able to manage that and what she thinks might be best for her overall. If that means that she would like to parent, we're going to help her just as much as if we would if she wants to place for adoption. And that sometimes that means that we are the person that is in the delivery room with her. And, you know, she needs an advocate there. And we certainly have participated in many children's births and been that type of a support for a woman. It may just mean that she wants to make an adoption plan, period, and she isn't looking for necessarily a support in the, you know, in the delivery room and so forth. It really, each of these plans are going to be designed individually for the women and what their needs are for that specific child. But if a woman should decide that adoption is something that she wants to look more closely at, towards the last few months of her pregnancy, we'll start to say, you know, it might be time to take a look at some of the profile books of waiting families if she feels that she's ready and prepared to make an adoption plan. And we'll certainly begin by understanding the circumstances of the child that she's carrying. So what race is that child? Have they been exposed to any drugs or alcohol during this pregnancy? Just what are the specific circumstances? And then we go to our family profile books, and we will select the families that are willing and able to parent the situation of that specific child and to meet that child's need. And those profile books are presented to her in a very neutral way, that she might select a family or two or three that she hopes to visit with face-to-face. And we will manage those meetings for her if she selects a couple or two to meet with, and help her to ask the hard questions and get to know a family before she makes a decision about who would be the right parents for her child. And from there, if she makes a decision about a family, we will help them establish a relationship. Sometimes that relationship is completely open, where they're going to share identifying information, and other times, we may recommend that we do something a little bit different. You know, if we have a birth mom that maybe there's safety concerns, maybe she has, you know, a felony history, or there are just some concerns that make it difficult to move into an open relationship, at least initially, we'll offer our services, such as, why don't we have a visit or two, within the first year here at a Lutheran Family Service office, where a caseworker is present. And, a birth mom might say, you know, I don't know that I can handle visits with my child, but I certainly would like to have pictures and updates sent. So all of these are really tailor-made arrangements with the families, with the birth moms, as to what works for all of them in that specific relationship.
Once a family, once adoptive parents have now become a family with their new adopted child, do you offer support for them as well once this new family is united?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, our support is, you know, in a very technical terms, we are required in Iowa to do post-adoption work. And that post-adoption work is a minimum of 6 months, where we're visiting the family on a regular basis, writing the reports that are necessary to make sure that the safety of the child is intact. And we also talk about the relationship, whatever relationship was going to be established, how is that worked out with the birth parent and so forth. And we provide any referrals that are necessary to the family and make sure that they're doing well. Now, our relationship typically would end in 6 months on a technical basis, because we would release that infant for a finalization of adoption. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, they can't call upon us and work with us, because that's part of the point of having an agency rather than just maybe working with an attorney and so forth, is that we will be here to help when there are situations that may arise. So, for instance, part of the post-adoption work that we do today here, you know, as I mentioned, we've been doing this since 1901, and many of the adoptions that we have worked with have been closed adoptions, which means that there are many adopted persons in Iowa here that were placed through Lutheran Family Service that do not know their birth family, and that may have interest in learning more about them, or if they have siblings somewhere else. And so we absolutely work in post-adoption in order to help with those types of things, as well as if we're talking about an adoption today and adoptive parents who have just been placed with an infant, that doesn't mean that they can't phone us a year later and say, you know, we've lost contact with the birth mom. We're hoping that you can help us track her down. You know, we really would like to be able to see her again. And so we can help work on that relationship ongoing. So in that regard, certainly our adoptive families have the opportunity for assistance really throughout the childhood of, you know, their adopted child, and certainly when their adopted child is an adult, if they need assistance here as well, we can do that, and are happy to be able to be a part of that process for many years. But we also provide that type of service for our birth parents. So as you can imagine, placing an infant for adoption is a just really an earth-shattering experience. It is the hardest thing that they will ever do. Mm-hmm. And the grief and the loss that they feel during that process is not something that we just dismiss and hope that, you know, they get better. But we provide for them certain counseling services for as long as they would like to continue to be in relationship with us. and you know, that we might be able to follow and help, and especially when it comes to the relationship that they might have with the family and with the adopted child, but also just their well-being and how have things gone since that placement. And on a more long-term basis, we provide birth parent retreats. We have a building in Fort Dodge, Iowa, that was built in the 1930s as the orphanage that we had here in Iowa when we were placing children. And, of course, we don't need an orphanage any longer. Children are placed, you know, in foster care in those situations. But we still own that building, and we've turned that into a ministry center. And so we have the opportunity to go to that building and to bring birth parents who have placed children for adoption, and we spend a weekend. We team up here with our mental health counseling staff and our pregnancy counseling and adoption staff, and we put on a retreat that helps these women come together. Some of them have never met another birth mother before that can actually relate to the loss and the grief that they have felt over not being in a position to parent their own child. And these can be very profound for the women who attend and really changing how they view themselves and being able to move on with their lives. And we're happy to be able to provide that to them as well.
With just a little bit of time left, Kim, how can we find out more about adoption services through Lutheran Family Service of Iowa?
Absolutely. Well, I would invite anyone who's interested in learning more about our adoption program here to give me a call. 515-251-4900 is the number that can be called. And certainly you can also get a bit of information on our website, which is LFS Iowa, and that's Iowa spelled out, .org.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for being our guest today, Kim Lobby, Director of Pregnancy Counseling and Adoption Services, Lutheran Family Service of Iowa. Thanks for being our guest on Faith and Family today, Kim.
It was my pleasure, Andy. Thank you so much.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.